You're listening to a Frequency Podcast Network production.
I am a Torontonian. I know by now that the rest of this country enjoys and even delights in making fun of us. Here's the thing. Sometimes they are absolutely right.
The city seems to have really stepped in it. They posted controversial signs here warning dog owners that excessive barking will not be tolerated.
Yep, that's us. Here in Toronto, you might be wondering how we found ourselves in this situation, banning dogs from barking in a park specifically built for dogs. Well, the truth is, we end up in these situations all the time. It's just kind of what we do here when it comes to our parks. It's not just barking dogs, it's recreational baseball players or beer drinkers, people who might have to pee or maybe need a drink of water, and, on a more serious note, people who have nowhere else to go. Today, we'll take you on a trip through Toronto's public parks. Please, I warn you, respect every sign you see, even if it contradicts a different sign that you've already seen. Even if it is as big as a highway billboard. Unless that sign is telling you to do something like enjoy a beer in the park. In that case, the City of Toronto would like to make clear that the sign, which they made and placed there and tells you that you can drink here, is not encouraging you to drink in any way. Got it? Yeah. Sometimes we deserve the jokes. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Ben Spurr is a reporter with the Toronto Star's City Hall Bureau, where you must hear an awful lot about parks, Ben.
Yeah, it comes up surprisingly often at City Hall, actually, maybe more often than you might think.
Well, for people outside of Toronto who might not understand why we're spending a Friday episode talking about parks and bylaws and municipal stuff in the City of Toronto, can you maybe just try to find like a word or two for how you describe the city's approach to parks and communication?
I would say it has been frustrating. That is, I think, maybe the word that might come to mind for a lot of Torontonians. The messaging and the kind of handling of public parks by the city has just drawn a lot of confusion and sometimes anger, really, at what seems to be kind of bureaucratic rules around what can and can't happen in parks.
I want to start with a great example, because this is a long-running story that I guess just kind of wrapped up last week. Can you tell us, please, about the no homers rule?
Yeah, so there's a park in the kind of downtown west end of Toronto called the McGregor Playground, which is actually not too far from my home. In this part of the city that used to be mostly industrial, but there's lots of kind of condos going up around there now and mid-rises. And a couple of years ago, it looks like, the city put up a sign in a ballpark that's right next to one of these new mid-rises that lists a whole bunch of rules about basically trying to limit balls flying out of the park and hitting the condo next door. And one of those rules is no home runs allowed. So that went up a couple of years ago, and it's one of those things that maybe people didn't notice too much, or the people who were playing in the park every day saw and maybe disregarded or whatever. But just recently, someone who I think had just started playing there on a local rec league team, you know, tweeted or posted a photo of the sign, and it quickly went viral and just kind of had a lot of people asking, why is the city trying to ban home runs in a ballpark?
And actually, our producer Joe plays baseball in that park, mm-hmm. and says they will get on you if you're not following the rules, and municipal bylaw officers will be called.
So that's an interesting note. Like I talked to some of the rec league organizers there, and I talked to some of the condo dwellers there who told me that things weren't exactly, it wasn't a sort of running battle between the two groups, and the softball organizers who play there said that they'd kind of come to a truce with the neighbors.
Oh, but that's good.
I love the image of a bylaw officer sitting in left field there just waiting for balls to go over and give someone a ticket. I don't know if that's ever actually happened, but certainly paints a picture.
And this would be one thing if it was a one-off thing. The reason we're talking about this is because of the general communication. So I'm asking you for one more. Tell us about the dog park, please.
Yeah, this was a park that, again, is actually kind of more central in the city. So there had been apparently some complaints about loud dogs, I guess, in this park.
In the dog park, the park for dogs.
In the dog park, yeah. And the city actually erected a sign that said that there was no loud barking allowed in the park, which again confused people, just because I think even more confusing than the no homers sign, because how do you stop your dog from barking? I don't have a dog, but I imagine that's pretty hard, especially in a dog park. And as with the no home run rule, as soon as kind of attention got called to the dog barking issue, the city pretty quickly removed the sign. I think we actually sent a reporter there to look into this story. And as they were approaching the sign, some city employees came over and removed it. The same thing happened with the home run sign. I went and looked at it in the morning, and then later that day I came back and the city had taped over it. So as soon as there's attention put to these kind of bizarre rules, yeah, it seems like the city is willing to backtrack and reconsider.
What happens around City Hall when one of these kind of stories breaks and you end up asking councillors or people about it? Like, how do they handle it?
It's an odd thing. I mean, no one ever really seems to know where these rules come from. A lot of the time, councillors often, I think, are probably as baffled as anyone else. These seems to be cooked up kind of in the, you know, offices at City Hall by bureaucrats and civil servants who clearly are trying to deal with, you know, competing needs in these parks. And they try to come up with some rules to maybe keep everyone happy. And they just don't seem to work out. But I think that's why these things are, you know, while they're silly, they're kind of interesting, right? Because I think they're indicative of the contested spaces that parks are in a city like Toronto, where a lot of people, you know, live in condos and small apartments and don't have big backyards. They go to these parks to be outside, to take their dog for a run or whatever else. Mm-hmm. And they kind of butt up against other residents who have competing demands on those parks, who you know, don't want noise and don't want their apartment windows hit with baseballs and whatever. So I think these are the kind of conflicts that spring up in a city like Toronto that's growing pretty rapidly and doesn't have a ton of, free green space these days.
That was an amazing segue, because it really is symbolic of a larger issue in terms of how the city manages its public spaces and how we use them. And that brings me to an actual currently changing, city policy that, again, some people in other cities might look at Toronto and chuckle. But earlier this summer, it finally became legal to drink in Toronto parks, right? And that was just simple. They allowed it in all parks and it was done and nobody ever heard of it again, right?
Sort of, yeah. After a couple of false starts, they've tried to do this a couple of times at the city, legalizing drinking. Didn't get through council. They kind of hummed and hawed over it. This year in July, they finally did legalize a pilot project. That's how we do everything here in Toronto. We do a pilot so that no one, you know, we can say that it's not permanent. And if it doesn't work out, if people complain, we'll cancel it.
And just to be clear, people were already drinking in these parks.
Absolutely, yeah. People were already drinking in public parks. And so technically, all that's happened is that they were legalized in a handful of about two dozen parks from councillors who opted into the program. But it's strange. There was this push from people who were worried about the enforcement of the no drinking rules. There were complaints that could be like discriminatory, that, mm-hmm. you know, perhaps bylaw officers or police would target racial minorities, for instance, would maybe get hassled more than other groups who would be doing the same, you know, drinking in parks.
Not in Toronto.
Right. But you could kind of understand, you know, enforcement, we know, is often unequal.
Yeah.
But also there doesn't seem to be any stats to back that up, in the sense that there hasn't been a lot of tickets given out. I think there were, you know, only a handful every year. So
right.
It doesn't seem like a huge issue, but there was this push to kind of just to legalize things so that to avoid that kind of problem.
And once this pilot project was launched, the city had a lot of guidelines around it, and they needed to tell people about that. So how'd they do that?
Yeah, they put up signs basically in the parks that had opted in to the program that advertised basically that these were some of the parks that you could drink in. But then a couple of counselors wrote to the city and complained about the signs because the signs basically said, you know, alcohol allowed in this park, the large billboards.
Yeah, like highway-sized billboards.
Yeah, exactly. And that the concern there seemed to be that this would be basically advertising or encouraging people to drink in public parks. And so counselors wanted to reduce the size of the signs and not have it look like the city was, you know, inviting everyone to come get drunk in this public space, I guess.
I think if you ask people outside of Toronto what's going on in Toronto parks, they would point to larger issues like encampments and the way that they've been removed in recent years. Can you explain a little bit about the bigger fight for these public spaces in Toronto and what that looks like at City Hall?
Yeah, I mean, those encampments, which there's a lot of controversy over the clearing of homeless encampments from three public parks in 2021. This was, you know, a couple of years into the COVID crisis when shelter space was at a premium. A lot of people didn't want to use shelters because they felt that they were unsafe due to the virus. So we had large numbers of people staying in public parks, and that caused conflict, with local residents who complained about it. There were concerns, you know, I think to varying degrees of truthfulness, I guess, about the danger posed by those people to local residents. And so we had this kind of long running debate over what to do. The people who kind of stood up for the people living in those encampments said, you know, there's nowhere to live in Toronto. If there's a housing crisis, you can't just force these people out. They're not going to go somewhere safer. They're just going to, mm-hmm. you know, go and more hidden away from the services that they need, for instance. And so it's unfair to basically evict them. But there was a lot of pressure from people who live near the parks to clear them out. So there was some pretty ugly scenes. I think it's fair to say when city staff backed by police moved in and removed people from those downtown parks, they did turn violent. And later on, the city ombudsman looked into the issue and said that the process for removing those people from the park had raised some fairness concerns. So yeah, there were pretty difficult scenes there. And we haven't seen a lot of reoccurrence of those encampments lately, in fact. And I don't know if that's just because the city is being more proactive about deterring people from setting up in those visible public spaces. But certainly that was a real flashpoint about the use of public parks a couple of years ago.
Toronto recently had a mayoral election. It has a new mayor in Olivia Chow. How might that change the city's approach to public space and how it's used? And what, if anything, has the new mayor said about that?
So to be fair, I think the idea of parks alone was not a major election issue in June when the mayor ran.
Right.
However, there was this idea that kind of started to percolate near the end of the former mayor, John Tory's term, about services in public parks. There was just this issue of water fountains and public washrooms not being open during the warm summer months. It would take weeks for city staff to go around to all the parks and activate the washrooms and the drinking fountains. And with the weather heating up and during COVID, a lot of people spending a lot of time outside, there was mounting frustration over that. And it seems like a small issue, and maybe people outside of Toronto might not understand why that kind of became a controversy, but just seemed to speak to, I think, wider concerns that Torontonians have about the state of the city and the quality of public services that they pay for. You know, Toronto's a really expensive city to live in. You would hope that just kind of the basic things that you pay your taxes toward, the city could do competently. And I think there was a growing frustration that park services served as a symbol for. During the election campaign, the eventual winner, Olivia Chow, she had an editorial board interview at the Toronto Star and actually talked about how she felt that there was a kind of broken conduit, was the term she used, between city staff and the public. She seemed to be saying that the city staff weren't really serving the public very well. And I thought that was kind of interesting because, you know, she's a left-leaning mayor with lots of ties historically to, you know, public sector workers and public sector unions. So to kind of hear her say that there's this kind of you know, the city staff needed to do a bit better, what was pretty notable. But she did also speak out against the encampment clearance. She said that when you're removing people from a public park, it doesn't deal with the homelessness problem. They just move from park to park, you know, go to subways or streetcars or on street corners or into ravines where people can't see them. They're out of sight, but they're still there and still in dire need. So she's moved on that front to free up shelter spaces, which is related to a whole other issue around refugee claimants coming to Toronto. And she's kind of tried to bolster funding on for that sector. But she hasn't, as of yet, kind of made parks a central theme of her young mayoralty. She's kind of got a bunch of other stuff to deal with, namely a massive budget shortfall that the city's facing.
Oh, it's not the number one issue on anybody's list, except mine today, I guess. Leaving aside the issue of encampments, which, as you point out, is part of a much bigger problem, for stuff like the baseball and the dog park and even the drinking in public, how much of it is actually people making bad choices on policy, and how much of it is just like bad communication? Because there's like a long list, as you mentioned, of things that you can't do in that park. And a lot of them are things that would naturally keep the balls from hitting the windows, like, you know, no aluminum bats or no hard balls, and instead you must play softball, which is, you know, not that unusual. Mm-hmm. But then you drop a no homers in there, and all of a sudden you're the object of ridicule instead of just doing some simple things to protect the apartment buildings.
Yeah. Again, I think it is bad communication, but I think you can kind of understand the motivation or see where the motivation comes from. Seems like someone there is trying to just draw up a list of rules that will, you know, whether or not they're enforced, whether or not there's a bylaw officer standing there trying to knock down balls from hitting the condo, that the city can kind of cover their butt, so to speak, right? And say, you know, we instituted these rules.
We told them not to hit a homer.
We told them not to do this. So therefore, if you're a condo resident who's been complaining to the local councilor, for instance, or complaining to the city, the city can say, look, we took these steps. And I think that's kind of a similar issue with the complaints about the signs about alcohol drinking in parks, and just more generally about the issue of drinking in parks. Like, it's this kind of thing where obviously we've all kind of as a society agreed that it's probably fine to have a couple of beers or a glass of wine in a park because everybody has been doing it, or many people have been doing it for many years. But to have a city councilor stand up and say, yes, I'm going to vote for that, that gives that city councilor a bit of a potential risk, right? Because that means that if you're living next to one of the beautiful parks in downtown Toronto, and one night there's a rowdy group of teenagers or something who are drinking and throwing garbage everywhere and causing a disturbance, then you're going to call your councilor and say, hey, you voted for that.
Right.
Even though, you know, that might have happened, whether or not drinking to parks were legal or not. So it's just this kind of political calculus, I think, that sometimes comes into these decisions that gets in the way of making what I think most people would agree would be common sense regulations.
I love a good ridiculing of bureaucracy, Ben. So thank you for this.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me on.
Ben Spurr, working out of the Toronto Star's City Hall Bureau. That was The Big Story. You can find other big stories at thebigstorypodcast.ca. And to reach us or send us pictures of whatever insane sign your local municipality has put in a park, you can find us on Twitter at TheBigStoryFPN. You can email us. We're at hello@thebigstorypodcast.ca, and you can call us. We are at 416-935-5935. You can leave us a voicemail. Joseph Fish is the lead producer of The Big Story. Robin Simon is also a producer on the show. Stephanie Phillips is our showrunner. Sound design this week was handled by Ryan Clark. Mary Jubrin is our digital editor. Diana Kay is our business development manager. I am your host and executive producer, Jordan Heath-Rawlings. Thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful weekend, and we'll talk Monday.